What I do every year Shavuos, I try and do every year Shavuos, especially the six sutras, I try and pick like a theme to talk about during the six sutras. So when I get it right, it goes very nicely. When I don't get it right, it doesn't work as nicely. So this year's theme is things that the Torah is compared to. Torah is compared to Lechem, Torah is compared to Yayin, Torah is compared to Mayim, Torah is compared to Eish, Torah is compared to Or. Right. So, and then the point would be during the Suda, I have a discussion about it, and I go around the table. What do you think, you know, whatever the topic is, you know. So one year I did numbers. So I says, how is the number one relevant to the Torah? Obviously, Kosh Baruch was Zechut, etc. How is the number two is relevant? Shnei Kosh Abris. Okay, or the three, what's the connection between three and Shavuos? That was the question I asked. I don't have to go through, you know.
Echem Yadei.
How is three connected to Shavuos? And I don't know. Well, it's Ferish Gemara. The more it says.
Shulash, Egla, Tiltar.
And the more it goes through this whole series of things. The more it says that the Bereshit gave us a Torah which has three parts to it. Through three, with the three Royim in the third month. You know, because this whole Tuklais, which has three parts to them, the Kadam Levim Yisraelim, and the Merkos, this whole thing. So why is three so important to Shavuos? Why is ten important to Shavuos? That's pretty easy. You know, so I did numbers one year. So this year I want to do this. And we went out of the room, like everybody gets a chance to talk. But I try beforehand, think through myself, like, what's the point I want to bring out? So I started today, and I sat down with, like, I started writing things, you know, if Torah is compared to Mayim, what or Alechem, what is the message? Now, L'chara, there's one point which is probably the primary point, which is usually pretty obvious. For example, the Torah is compared to Mayim. What's the point compared to Mayim? Mayim is life-giving. Without water, you can't live. Torah is like water, it's life-giving. That's the Chara Pshuta of the Torah's Nimshul of the Mayim. We see from Chazal did not understand it like that, only. Because Chazal say that the more makes it, how do you know the Torah only goes to a person who is an anav? Because just like Mayim has a nature, it goes from a high place to a low place, Torah only goes to one who lowers himself. How do you know the Torah only goes to a person who's Atzmalel? Again, Mayim goes from a high place to a low place, a person who's willing to work very hard, etc. The more compares it to, he's lowering himself for the Torah. So it means Chazal saw, even though the pshuto, the mashal to Mayim is not limited, not only to the primary idea that it's life-giving, but every element which we can draw parallel is some lesson about the Torah, which we're going to learn from the mashalim which the Torah gave. So I started making my list. So in your packet, the second page in red didn't come out. I just want to go through some of them, and we can talk through some of them a little bit. Maybe if you have any ideas, so it'll be helpful for me, save me a little bit of work. All right? So, this is just a starting point. Definitely, I'm open to ideas. So, the Torah is compared to Lechem. So, the simple understanding is the Torah is compared to Lechem is because Lechem is the primary source of sustenance of a person. So, Torah sustains the person. Right? That would be the heart of the simple understanding. I thought about, you know, we find that by bread there's a limit on what you could eat. Is there a limit by Torah? Okay. Question mark. Uh-huh. Torah is acquired, bread requires omol, as opposed to water, which is available immediately. Bread, there's a whole process how to make bread. So Torah is only it doesn't come to its completion on its own. It has to be, the person has to do it. So Torah, there's a difference between Torah, the Torah which the person has to create, and the Torah which you get from Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Chazal understand that there's the beginning of Tillim. It says that Ki b'sar Hashem chafsei, b'sar Hashem yega yom ha'balayla. The Bereshit's Torah he wants, and therefore he's ha'yega in his Torah, because a person develops his own understanding. Each person contributes something. Torah is bread is considered an ikar of a meal. Everything else is bottled, and automatically everything else is included in the bracha. Because you look at all of the foods as being subsidiary to lechem. So the correct way to look at Torah is everything else is subsidiary to the Torah. Interesting. The gematria of the word pas is 480, which is the same gematria as the word Talmud. Okay, that's not mine. bread has to be ingested and it has to be digested. There's also psoilus by bread. So are we supposed to understand that there's something like, of that sort by Torah or not? You don't have the next page. I didn't copy a mistake. But just bread tastes much better when it's fresh, as opposed to stale bread. Water doesn't really get stale. The bread gets stale. So, you know, there's a moment of learning which is fresh, there's a moment of learning which is stale. So when Torah is compared to bread, that it has to be fresh. Torah fattens you. Bread fattens you. You get fat from eating a lot of bread. So do you get fat? Does Torah fatten you? So the reason why I thought about that, there's this fascinating Maral. Maral talks about the idea of Ish Israel Chaim Bloho. The part the more talks about that Russia would be Bolei of the Tzadik. Hashem won't let him do that. So Maral said that's the only person who has Torah.
What does that mean, Bolei?
Absorb it, swallow him. Right? You know, the nature of people is that Pasha, they're going to, because also without the government, people would swallow each other alive. That's the nature of man. Not very good people, right? So the Moor says that Russia has a desire to be Balei of the Tzadik. He wants to eat the Tzadik, to totally eradicate him, and take whatever he has into himself, and that's it. The guy says, but he can't, because the person who has Torah is too big to eat. You fatten him up. Right? Is that? I don't know. Just to, you know. So that's the idea. Of what I'm doing. Now, I'm expecting to go around the room and get, you know, people. I'm not going to say all of these. These are things that I thought of, but I'm going to pick one and say which one's the primary one that I want to focus on. So if we see that Torah is compared to lechem, now it's compared to mayim also. Mayim is also life giving. So if we compare it to lechem versus mayim, there has to be something which lechem is teaching me about the Torah, which I wouldn't know from the mashal to mayim. So the fact that Torah just sustains us, we could possibly get the same thing from comparing it to mayim. So there has to be something unique about Torah, even though obviously the most obvious understanding of the comparison to lechem is the fact that it sustains. There has to be something more to it than just that, which there's something which comparing it to lechem adds to understanding of what Torah is about. So that's going to be the question which I want to try and figure out. That which one of these, again, I gave eight, you know, is the one we should focus on. Maybe there's another one you want to think of. I don't know. Do you think of what comes to your mind when you think that Torah is compared to mayim? Torah is compared to lechem.
Number three, the Amal, the Melus.
Okay.
Melus, number Torah.
Okay, David, what comes to your mind when you say Torah compared to lechem?
I have to think about it.
Okay, Sammy, what do you think?
It's just you can't live without either one of them, without bread or without.
Water.
Torah.
Oh, without Torah. Right. Okay. So that's my question. So the problem with that is, the challenge with that is, and that obviously I think that's the simple understanding of it, there has to be something more to it, because you can't live without water either. So the Torah, the Pasuk compares the Torah to lechem, the Torah compares the Torah to mayim. So if it's just that you can't live without it, you can't live without water either. So there has to be something beyond just the simple understanding you can't live without it.
Plus you need water to make lechem.
That's true too.
Right. That's why I really think the Amelus, I mean, that's the whole idea. The whole idea of Kinyan Torah is that it's not like mayim that just comes to you. So that point will not be...
I just thought of something. Please don't. I got something on my list. The last page is like a list of things which I didn't get to.
Oh, good.
I said another one I didn't get to. All right, so Melus is, you know, that bread is not automatically available. You have to, it's a whole process.
It's also the symbol, Bezeas Apecha Tochalecha. So it's the symbol of, I mean, other foods are also not as easy to get, but the symbol of it is Bezeas Apecha Tochalecha. Lechem is a symbol of Bezeas Apecha, right? And the Torah, the whole idea of the Torah is she'ena Yerushalach, she'tu amelim batorah is a concept. It's not just an extra bonus. I mean, that's the idea of In other words, it's not really Torah if it's not Yerushalach. You just get it easily. It's not. So I think it's you have to have the mayim with the lechem together. You can live technically without lechem if you have other foods, I guess. It's not. I don't think that's the point of the lechem. The point of the lechem that it symbolizes the zeyas apecha tochal, the idea of a meilus, more than any other food, because the pasuk says.
Okay.
So I think.
Are you convinced?
Almost. Almost.
It's the best you can do on the spot.
I don't know. I mean. David?
I'm thinking. We're trying to compare water to Torah. Excuse me, bread to Torah.
Torah to bread.
Torah to bread.
What do you mean by comparing Torah to bread? I don't explain that.
The Mora says that the Torah is nimshal to lechem.
Compared to lechem.
So when I say a moshul, the purpose of the moshul is to clarify some point about the nimshal. Right? You don't understand what I'm saying. Well, you know, I'll give you an example of it, and you'll see. Like, well, just like, you know. That's what I'm trying to find. It's very common in Kabbalah, right? You know, you have these Kabbalistic concepts that are like really difficult to understand, but I give you a mushal of something which functions in this world. It gives you a little bit of an understanding of what that is. So the purpose of mushal is to give you a better understanding of the thing that we're talking about. So if the Torah is nimshalo to lechem, means that I don't know what Torah is, I don't know everything about Torah, but when I compare it to lechem, I say, well, the certain properties lechem has. I understand the Torah has those properties as well, so now I understand a little bit better what Torah is through that moshul. So that's the purpose of a moshul.
I would say simplicity, but Torah is not simple. Bread is simple.
Okay.
Bread, all you have in bread is a couple of ingredients.
It's not more simple than water, though. So what does that add?
Wait, so why are we comparing it to lechem instead of mayim?
Well, the Torah is compared to both.
Right. So,
what is
that? Question.
What is the moshul to lechem adding more than? Let's say we go through mayim first, and we see on the page of mayim that I wrote down 10 things that come to mind, what the moshul to mayim.
And how many have on the lechem page?
Lechem have 8.
Ah, so mayim's winning.
The question is, so I went through mayim already, let's say, and I could thought of everything that I could think of to compare it to mayim. Okay, so you know what? Okay, hold that. Let's see what we add when we compare it to lechem.
I have one.
Yeah.
Right? With water, you can live, but you can't grow. With bread, okay, you can grow. It provides sustenance.
Interesting. Sorry, I'm using you guys to do this. Interesting point. Okay, it has the building blocks. It has proteins. It has carbohydrates. It has what you can build. The body can build on water. You can't live without water. But you don't, there's no growth. Nice. I like that. Okay.
So Torah, it will be, we grow through Torah.
Nice. I like that. Thank you. So let's turn to Mayim. So it's also compared to Tau. So on the next page is Mayim. So again, you know, you're not mashubat to my thing. This was what I thought of. Actually, I thought of another one. Another mar, but that's what happens. right? So, Torah is compared to Mayim. It's compared to Geshem. It's compared to Tal also. Beginning of Parshas Hazinu. Yarav Kamor Tor Lichi Tizak Atali Mersi. So, it's compared to Mayim. The first thing I thought of was that water is very clear. So there's a certain clarity to Torah. Water is life-giving. The more compared to a fish, we can't live outside of water. The more says so. We can't live outside of water. Outside of Torah. The Rashi one time said, why does it more use the mashal of the fish? He says, the more says that the nature of fish is when new drops of water come down, they jump up towards it. And even though they have all this water around them, they're living in an ocean, but one more drop, they want. So a person should have that attitude towards Torah like that.
Nice.
The Goyin says that rain causes things to grow, but it grows what's there. So if you have kitzim and dardarim, if you have bad things, Torah will make you, if you're balgaiva, to start with Torah will make you bigger balgaiva. Right? It's not guaranteed that Torah is going to correct you.
Why? Because you use that the Torah to do what you want to do as far as gaiva is concerned.
Right, so whatever mitzvos rose you have inside of you, the Torah can make those grow. Rain, you don't see the results immediately. It's not nikar miyad. Right? It takes time for it to grow. So water has the ability to make things. You don't see the reaction right away. The pasuk says that water is simply because it's free. Water is like basically water is. It goes in very easily. It doesn't grow stale.
Water is free.
Water puts out the fire. So that's the most of the.
If only it was free.
The Yetzihara. Water is used as a cleanser. And the more says, I thought of another thing in Middle Shemanesh. Of course, I forgot it now. What was it? Okay, I had the idea of being free. It'll come back to me in the middle of the next one, probably. the Gemara says the reason why it's compared to mayim and compared to tal, because tal, the Russian never takes away tal from the world. There's always tal. Whereas geshem, sometimes the Russian holds back geshem. So it has both elements of being like tal and being like geshem. Geshem obviously is much more powerful than just tal. So it has both elements to it.
Geshem is also sometimes negative.
Okay.
But tal is always positive, the Gemara says. Tal is negative.
Right. Mississippi.
Huh?
Look at Mississippi. It's tal. Geshem is negative.
They're right.
Flooding.
Yeah. No. The Gemara talks about how Geshem could be good or bad, but tal is always always good. Mm-hmm. So it's probably a better comparison for Torah.
The Rebbe said that Torah will exacerbate the problems of a person.
There's a Gra like that. The Gra says that Torah, I think it's based on a Chazal, if I recall correctly, but it's a Gra says that just learning Torah without working on the Musar of Avodas Amidus, Torah can actually make things worse.
Well, Musar is Torah.
And that's true. But if a person doesn't do Avodas Amidus, there's two parts to Musar. There's the learning of Musar, and then there's the Avodas Amidus.
So a person who's Balgava, he learns Musar, it's not going to help him without acting?
Without doing the process of Avodas Amidus, he says.
Just by learning it
will not necessarily help him.
Right? He might learn the mechanics, but he's not implementing them.
You know, there's the Shilsham writes a Lashon over there one place. He says that you get to the laughable situation of the person who wants to be respected for the fact how much of an anav he is. In other words, he's a Balgaiva about the fact that he's an anav. Right, so that like that's human beings, So, it means he worked. He learned about the importance of anivus, and he acts like an anav. But deep down, he's being a spoiler over myself. There's a maestro with the Alter from Kelim, Alter from Sobotka. Alter writes, he says, Bechlal. I mean, which maybe is looking at one of the other ones, that there's a nekudah of balance. He says that. We don't. We're like, you have a machine. You push over here, something pops out over there. So we have to be very careful with our avodah that the avodah should be very balanced. It says, because otherwise, you press too much on one thing, something else comes out. So I told you this once. I had this conversation with this about the mikvah and tells.
Sounds familiar. Right? Yeah.
So tells the shiva in the dorm. There's a mikvah in the dorm. A men's mikvah in the dorm. So what's the story of the men's in the dorm? That tells us even men's bastion of Litvaks, what are they putting a mikvah in the men's dorm? the old building before they moved to the campus where they are, the old building in Cleveland, did not have a mikvah, and they moved out to the property. They didn't build a mikvah, and the Chassidus Shabbatim were living in yeshiva, so they were living in the city. There was a mikvah nearby, so we go to the mikvah. Now they moved out to Wycliffe. There was no mikvah nearby. So Erev Shabbos, there was a bus. They would take the bachurim. The Chassidus Shabbatim, they arranged that they had like a van with them to take them to go to the mikvah. Then they had the fire, and they built a new dorm. So the speaker Rebbe, the present day speaker Rebbe, was then a Talmud in yeshiva. So his father came to her Motel Katz and said, I would pay for the cost of building a mikvah in the dorm. So this way my son, and you know, the present day Mukacha Rebbe also learned the tells in those days, that day, you know, so there's a few other, you know, that was like a lot of the Rebbes would send their children to learn the tells. They trusted the Rishivas very much, etc., that their Mechanchim wasn't just them. It was a real welcome place of avodah. So they did it. But Ramatul said that Tanai was that Bachram have a Masorah, that's their minig, should go. Bachram, no, that's not the Masorah, that's not their minig. They shouldn't go. So the mikvah was locked. The whole week the mikvah was locked, and the Bachram got a key. Each Bachram was, that was, you know, those Bachram, but that was their Masorah. The Chassidus Bachram, they got a key to the mikvah. Erev Shabbos was open. People would go Erev Shabbos. So I want to have a conversation with the Bachar. Like, he wants to know, like, why is yeshiva, like, you know, I want to go to mikvah, like, what's so bad? I should go to the mikvah. Like, why are they locking the door to the mikvah? Like, what's getting on? I should go to the mikvah. Like, you know, it's so terrible. So terrible. I should go to the mikvah. I said, you know, I want to tell you a story. So once a day, there was a bachur woke up one day, and he was like, really, really, like, tremendous resolve, but he's going to have to change and become better. And mama, she's, you know, I, it's not good anymore. I'm really messing myself up. I really need to change and get better. And the Yitzhahara Pashat was mama sweating bullets. Because this guy is mama, he's so ready to change. See, Yitzhahara is very nervous. This guy can make major changes. Is it Bittul Torah, you know, Lashon Hara, you know, Shabbos, Tahara, all these different things. He can really make major issues. He can really make a major change. He's like so. See, he knows he can't stop the guy. So he comes to the person and he whispers in his ear, he says, mikvah. And the person says, yeah, mikvah. Such a good idea. I'll go to mikvah every morning. And Yitzhahara says, Baruch Hashem. That's the story of the Yitzhahara and this bachur. That's what I told him. He says, that's how we work. We push on one thing, and when we end up not, you know, we end up losing somewhere else. So he brings a mice over there with that altar of Sabotka. There's a bachur who was working very much on Kedusha Shabbos. See, he was kaveya that by Erev Shabbos, by Chatzos, he's ready for Shabbos. So every, you know, see, he was, you know, everything was ready. He mamash did no malacha from Chatzos and Erev Shabbos and onwards. So the altar in his pichistic way of understanding chinuch, he calls the bachur and says, "I don't know what you accomplished with your this being makabel Shabbos early when you sit there looking down at your nose, everybody else with your guy." And that was it. Like, yeah, I'm such a big tzaddik that I'm a Kabbalah Shabbos early. You don't understand the Kedusha Shabbos.
I shut down at 3 o'clock and you're still working.
You know, you're still working. Like, what's you know, shake it, you know, like, you know, right? So what'd you accomplish? That's what the Alter Sabotka said to him, you know. The Alter Chab Tis Talmidim, you know. You know, we wouldn't have not handled some of these things so well over there. Right? But, I tell you, once I had a bachur woman here who got so upset. There's a sefer called Meiros HaGedolim. Meiros HaGedolim was put up by Rabbi Zaitchik Zatzal, and he was malakit like different stories of these different Gedolei Musar. So he has a section on the altar for Sabotka, and the stories are mamish fascinating. But you know, you see the man had a vision. I mean, this is the person you understand. This is Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rabbi Yaakov Ruderman, Rabbi Yitzchak Hutner, Rabbi Gazowski. There's five of the mamash. The Gedolei who built America. And each one was different, and he made them each one different. And there's Bachar, which he was in yeshiva, which he punched mamash, changed. He built them up. You know, there's one Bachar needed like a builder. He was once sitting with some gedolim, and the bachur walked in, and he stood up for the bachur Malik Moshe, says, "This bachur is a Ricky Vager." You know, mamash, he made the guy on a pedestal. And there was another bachur. The following story: there was a bachur in yeshiva. The bachur was in yeshiva for 5 years. The altar never once said a word to him. Let me say good job, but like he never once, you know, spoke to him. The Bacher's father was Nifter. He got the message. He was sitting Shiva in Sabbath. He didn't go home because it was, you know, to get home wasn't worth it. So he sent Shiva in Sabbath, in the Yeshiva. So the altar came to Menachem Avim. So the Bacher had been sitting on his heart for all these years that everybody else the altar talks to, and him he ignores totally. So when he came to Menachem Avim, so the Bacher said to the altar, you know, why do you always ignore me? So he said to the Bacher, he says, why should I talk to you? You know you're learning well. He says, Terrence, what?
You don't need a pat on the back.
You want for your gaiva that I should give you the compliments. I don't say words for your gaiva. I'm walking to Menachem's coming, he walks out the door. Right?
Wow.
Like the guy sitting, I remember I had a Bacher in the Yeshiva, it was a very sensitive Bacher. He was so angry with this story, the guy sitting shiva with his father. And like, you know, and he's like, the altar comes in and totally destroys the fellow on the spot. You know, I don't know how else was there. I don't know whether anybody else there or not. Like, I mean, how can you do that? He was so angry. He says, Rebbe, I'm ready to walk out of my Spanish and take my yarmulke off. That's how angry he was. And this is what a gadol is. I'm done. I says, you know what? You're right that you couldn't handle this. But, right? The altar knew his talmidim. There was a talmidim which he did the opposite. You know, he built him up to, and this Bacher had a problem with gaiva. And he did break his gaiva. It's not a chesed to break somebody's guy when they need to have it broken. So maybe this is the best opportunity. It really, really went in. The taka really hurt tremendously. And he realized he has a gaiva problem. So he did him a chesed, you know. Elway, what, you couldn't handle it? Okay, you're right. Americans can't handle it. Americans are cream puffs. You know? Reb Henoch Zatzal said that, I think his father said, or he said, you know, that... He says, American Bacher are like you know, the tissue paper. You blow your nose at it one time and it falls apart. Like, that's American Bacher. Like, you know, they can't handle anything, any type of, you know, I'm upset with you, ice match. Like, you know, he's in a yeshiva for like the next 3 weeks, he's depressed, you know, like, you know, like, in Europe that's what they did. In Europe they pushed and they pulled. Very stark. Yeah, you can learn a lot of Torah and still be bal gaiva. You know, avodas hamusar is creating the understanding that there's a lot going on deep down inside of us. We need to be honest with it. We need to look in the mirror honestly and realize, you know, what our motivations are and what the issues are, and then work on them slowly. The process, there was a major you know, work of avodah, and you can see. There's people which are tremendous chachamim, and they push it changed. And you see, there's the people which have tremendous knowledge of Torah, and they're not. You know, I met both in my lifetime.
I see it.
So what are we adding over here with the water?
But in that case, if the guy is a big tough, does all these things so carefully, and it's not affecting his midos, does that mean he should loosen up on some of that stuff? Or that something? He's so strict about going to davening, but then his wife is upset, so he's never at home. Like, is that a reason to... that's what it comes like.
the balance is no choice. There's a mice with a nosin latvigel about this young man who's coming late to davening every day, and he's upset at him. You know, he's a young man, you know, he should be holding beyond that. Also, he's bachur, look at him, etc. He says, you know, I really want to come, but every day I what can do? There's a woman who has 3 young children, and she's overwhelmed, and I stop and I help her.
It's his wife.
So he says, wow, such a chesed, etc. I understand. Okay, fine. He says, by the way, it's my wife. Like, you know, so just because of my wife, I shouldn't do chesed to her, for her. Like, you know, that's okay. So I don't know. So she shouldn't go to davening. Like, you know, so you have to figure out what the matzav is, you know. So maybe, you know, you have to figure out. So maybe his responsibility is to get up and go down with the Vesika Minyan at 5:30 in the morning so he can come home and help his wife at 6:30, you know. You're so machbet on davening. Zunt hate me machbet on davening, but not why your wife's cheshbon. So go to the early minyan. You know, there's other ways. It's not like, you know, it's an all or nothing. It's either or. There's with creativity, there's a lot of solutions sometimes. You know? So you know what? You're makron and davening. Kermesh Shabura, davening vasikin is better than davening with a tzibur. Okay, so daven vasikin every day. In the summertime, you know. So you'll be up early. You'll be available with your wife. You get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Elamai, what you can't learn later on, because you'd be so exhausted. Okay, so go to sleep early. And it's hard to go to sleep because I want to choose my wife. Okay. I don't know. You figure it out.
Right.
It doesn't. It's not easy. Okay. So. I mean, notice, like you said, basically I said things over here which are positive about water. You're saying, you know, rushing water is dangerous.
Water. Just like Torah. If you're not immersing yourself in Torah all the time, it's going to evaporate. Just like water will evaporate if it's left open for a while without being used.
To what you're saying, that you have to jump into the water, have to jump into the Torah. Torah is not part time.
Oh, very good.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you jump too much in the water, you won't survive. So that's the rest is about the Torah.
You
know
how to swim.
Okay. Oh, that's a good one. So you got to, when you jump into the Torah, you got to know how to.
The Yamatam, right?
Right. If you don't know how to swim through it, it can lead to problems. It's just true, right? Yeah. Just learning it as an intellectual, you got to know how to swim. That's a good one.
Okay. So the next one is Yayin. So the things that I thought of, the wine gets better as it gets older. So as opposed to, let's say, bread is the opposite, the other end of the spectrum. It gets staler and staler and staler. So Torah is compared to wine in the sense that it gets better and better. The more you learn, the person who learns as because I'll talk about the mile of learning from a young child because it's fresh. But there's also mile of learning as a zaken because there's a tremendous understanding that he has. So there's both. Yain is intoxicating. Yain is addictive. Yain is flavorful. Yain needs to be limited because it can be dangerous.
So we're back to the sakanas of Torah here.
What?
If you want to compare it again. It sounds like too much.
Well, I'm saying addictive and intoxicating are not necessarily bad.
No, the number five.
No,
saying
number
limited
five,
to be.
Right. How could you have too much
Torah? That almost sounds like...
Shiur, excuse me.
Yeah.
May I?
Yeah, please.
Shiur is, you have to have a shiur. That's what shiur is, a measure.
Yeah, but not in terms of, do we always say Torah is unlimited? I mean, there's too much learning
now,
Torah could be bad. I mean, that's it.
A measure now, take 5 minutes, take another measure.
That's an interesting point. In other words, you're thinking in terms of time. But, you know, there's also the point of taking things. I don't teach a sixth grader a difficult choices because his mind is not ready for it. It's just going to confuse him and get him frustrated. He's not going to understand it, or he'll understand it incorrectly.
Right. So there is a danger in learning certain things when you're not ready for it.
So
it's like with the water and swimming. It's the same idea. I think there's a danger to be thrown into the water if you don't know how to swim. It's the same thing with thrown into something in Torah or Kabbalah especially, but
you don't know how
to get through it. We haven't.
Rav Aaron told me that Rav Moshe Shapiro, Zichli Bracha, had a chabur that he learned a different, Sistrei Torah with. So when you start talking about the Olamas and Seers and different things, like, it's hard to grasp exactly what you're talking about because you're not talking about physical things, you're talking about concepts. But you're using physical descriptions to describe concepts, which is very difficult to do. That's why Kabbalah, the the Ramchal says the Rizal already that all of Kabbalah is really a mashal. There's nothing which is to be understood kipshutai in Kabbalah. All, everything is just a mashal for another layer of understanding. Now she one time, she'll tell you, by the way, they have a mashal. She one time said a pshat says by Shlomo Melech that he composed 3,000 mashalim. It's like, you know, it doesn't sound like such a big praise, you know. So he's, you know, Aesop had fables, you know. So he had 3,000 fables, you know. He says that's not what it means. He says imagine I have a concept which is difficult to understand. So I give you a mashal to understand the concept. But imagine that the concept is so difficult that even the mashal is difficult to understand. So I give you a mashal to understand the mashal. So Shlomo Melech had such a deep understanding that you needed 3,000 layers of mashalim to get down to the pshat. That's where we get the tight pshat in the pasuk. Right. Like somebody complained to me when the Ram was explaining something with a mashal. He says, you know what, the mashal is so complicated, I don't understand. I need a mashal to understand the mashal. I said, aha, that's what we're talking about. Right. You need a mashal to understand the mashal, you know. Yeah. So imagine you need a mashal to understand the mashal, understand the mashal, understand the mashal, etc. Okay. So, but taking something like that and trying to giving it over to somebody who's not really understanding it, it comes out wrong. It's like one time a person, like, you know, started like describing something, like, you know, with his finger. So Rav Moshe says, take your grubba finger and take it off of the spheres, please. Take your hands off of the spheres. You know, like, I mean, you know, picturing it as, no. It doesn't work like that. You don't discuss Kabbalah with your hands like that. Take your hands off of the spheres, Rav Moshe said to Rav Moshe Shapira. So there is a nakuda of, you know, but I would understand it even more prosaic, that, you know, the process of committing to learn Torah has to be done within the person's strength, his ability to handle it. Right? And one of the challenges you have with, you know, in the world of Torah is people which push themselves too much and then end up getting sick, whether physically or emotionally. Right? They put too much pressure on themselves, because there's a sefer about Bittul Torah called Binyan Olam. It was written by a chasham about Musar Tamachachon in B'nai Brach, not alive anymore, Zichron Livracha. Very, and, you know, not much a big place to get that. It's extremely intense. And the Shiur of Chaim asked the sefer and tells. He says that Pasha could, the pressure it put on the Bachrim, they would learn it, about the Chumrah of Bittul Torah was so pressurizing, it was Pasha undermining their health. And he asked the sefer to be used, learned in the yeshiva. Because you push yourself too hard, and there was a Bachrim who had a nervous breakdown. Like, the guy was learning day and night, and day and night, and night and day, and day and night, and one day he just, middle of night seder, he went up to the, you've been a thousand, you picture it, right? He went up to the Amud, you know, up the Duchen, gave a clap and said, I'm Mashiach.
Ouch.
He lost it. And he lost it, you know, mentally, he lost it. So, he had to go for, Baruch Hashem, went for therapy, he's doing fine, you know, Baruch Hashem. But, like, it was like, and one of the Rebbeim, already predicted it a while back. He says he's pushing himself too much. He's pushing himself too much, and it's not going to be good. You know, but
that's number five,
right? Saying, you know, there are limits. You know, Torah is a person needs relaxation. A person needs a break. Those are valid needs which the human being has. The goal in life is to move that slowly. I have less of those needs, you know, but that the person will jump too quickly. The guy, I told you, the guy says, the pasuk says in Mishlei, Ivelas Adam Tisal Darka, Ivelas Hashem Yizav Liboy. He says a person's idiocy, his foolishness, makes his path go crooked. Says, and then he blames Hashem. He says, what's it talking about? Talking about a person who jumps too quickly and about Hashem. He says, the result is that he falls flat on his face. And then he says, Hashem, I have such a big tzaddik. I worked so hard. I tried so hard. Why don't you help me? It's all your fault. Why don't you help me? Moshe says, because you jumped too quickly. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, the mashal is if a master says to his servant, please go up to the attic and get something, he doesn't mean jump. He means take a ladder and walk, go up the ladder. So there's no master says that ever, you know, goes to get a ladder and says, what are you doing? He says, I meant jump. This isn't. No, you meant to go up a ladder. Obviously, no master is going to say something. But the guy says to jump. He says, what are you doing? He says, well, you told me to go up the attic. So I'm jumping up the attic, you know. Even if you're Michael Jordan, you know, like, you know, still, you know, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
The guy who jumps, you know.
Yeah.
Right?
You just dated yourself.
I did?
You dated yourself, yeah.
Okay.
The young kids don't know, well, maybe they still do from the tennis shoes.
No, I mean, listen, I'm still thinking, you know, like, you know, I said a more modern name, you know. You know, but me, it was Will Chamberlain.
Okay.
Okay. Not dating myself, okay. You know, it doesn't mean to jump. It means to go step by step. But you jump. It's ridiculous. That's what people do. You know, okay, forget it. I'm going to sit and learn 20 hours a day. Like, you know, like, you're going to plots. So that's what I thought of when I said it needs to be limited because it can be dangerous. You know, wine, maybe also, because there's a fascinating mashal Chazal say about, you know, there is that it's a medrash in Parshas Noach that, Noach went and planted a kerem. So the sultan came and watered the kerem with blood of animals. So he said, so the first he came and he shechted a lion over there and watered it with the lion's blood. And then he came and shechted it with a sheep and with the sheep's blood. And then he shechted a chazir with the chazir's blood. He says, you drink one cup, you feel like a lion pushing, I could take it. You drink another cup, you're very meek. And the third one, you look like a chazir, you're like, mama, always get sprayed to the dirt. You know, he was, you know, wine, different stages of wine bring out different things in a person. Right? It can take away his inhibitions, which allows him to be strong, etc. It can feel overwhelmed and jump back in this corner. It can be totally lost in the wallow in the dirt, like a chazir. I don't know, so that's what I thought about you. What do you think of? You think of wine?
I don't know if I can add anything to it.
No prayer. There's, you know, if you think of something.
Okay. Yeah, Yai Nesach is a big deal. Like, it's our, we can only use our wine. Same thing with Torah, I guess. You can't teach a Goy Torah, so. More than any other food, right? There's a concept.
Flavorful/colorful.
Okay. So later on, when I did Shemin, I thought about the ideas that, you know, that the Zohar talks about the loss in the Sura of the loss in the future. There's going to be Yayin Hashemer Be'anovim. The wine is contained inside of the grape. It's the pneumias of the grape. You squeeze it out, and out comes the wine. So wine is represents, wine and oil both represent the idea of the pneumias of something being brought out.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to being superficial, it's outside you don't see any wine, you see a grape. Inside you see this outcome is this phenomenal, fascinating thing. So when we work on the pneumias of something, it has a whole different understanding, and that's where you bring out the flavor. But the color, interestingly enough, by wine, the color is in the shell. It's an interesting thought to think about that. Right? That's, I heard that twice when winemakers did a tour with the winemaker.
Really? That's where the color comes from?
Yeah, and you go there too, and Dalton, there's a moshav called Dalton. That's where the wine, Dalton wine is made. So they have a tour of the winery. They said they brought the Concord grapes. You take off the shell; they're like a whitish. They're like a
really?
White yellow color. It says all of the coloring of the red coloring is in the skins.
Wow. Huh. I had no idea.
And the same thing I did. If you ever want to do a Holy Moor trip or something like that, there is a winery. There is a in Virginia, which it's a goy, Mr. Papadopoulos, is his name. a Greek fellow. His families were winemakers back in Greece, etc. And he makes wine. OU does a kosher run there twice a year. So he does a tour explaining everything he's doing, etc. And at the end, you can
taste the OU wine.
He gives it to you. You open it. You know, I mean, you pay for it the same, but you know that's part of the tour. And this place is down over there, so we did it. We did it one Kolomoy. We went over there. It was very perfect. It was like the four of us plus like three other people on the tour. He shows you the grapes, and so he pointed out the same thing, that the color is, and mixing the different types of grapes gives you different colors, etc. Okay. The next one is fascinating, and we'll hold it here. Just take them home.
I'm going to add to it. Okay. Bring it back. Homework.
Listen, you use it over Yom Tov. I don't know. If you want to. You know. So there is a... there's a Medrash in Parshas Nosei, which this is called Torah Kula Ein Ela Simanim. It's a lot of language of the Medrash. Torah is Simanim. So Shas, what does it mean? So... Rav Aaron Cutler Zatzal said on that the idea of simonim, it says he compared it to a Landkarte. A Landkarte is a map. So it's just like on a map. So I'm going to say over Rav Aaron Cutler's thought the way I want to explain it. So I'll tell it to you in the context of a story. So Rav Moshe Shapiro, the big Machshava, Bal Kabbalah, etc. His father's name is Rav Meir Shapiro. Rav Meir Shapiro was a Talzer Talmud. Learned in Europe under the Alta Talzer Rav, the Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch. So he made it to Eretz Yisrael before the war, I think. And right at the beginning of the war. So when Rav Meir opened Hellstone in Eretz Yisrael in 1977, Rav Meir Shapiro was still alive. So Rav Gifter invited him to come speak to the Bachurim. He learned by the Alta Talzer Rav, So he came and speak to the Bachurim. And he said over a thought, which I heard from one of the Bachurim who told me it was there, that, reaction was like this. Rav Gifter said, Gevaldik! Everybody said like, huh? That was the reaction. Okay. Here's the question. The question is like this. That there's a Mechalek HaTzin, Rav Akiva, and Rav Tarfon in Sechtes Yuma between the Seder Avodah and Yom Kippurim, how certain things, when they happened in the Seder Avodah. So somebody asked Dalta Talzer Rav, the Yosef Leib Bloch, I don't understand. You say Elam Elijah B'Kim Chaim, but Aaron HaKohen
did something.
And Moshe Rabbeinu was there. Moshe Rabbeinu told him to do X and then Y, and not Y then X. See, he either did it like Rav Akiva or like Rav Tarfon, not both. So one of them is right, one of them is wrong.
Right.
That was the question. So, be ready to say ha, okay? So the response of the Rabbi Yosef Leib was, he said in Yiddish, he says, what's meant to? What are you thinking? Do you think that Aaron HaKohen, the person, Aaron HaKohen and the Torah, are the same Aaron HaKohen? That was his answer. So he gives us, ah, Shigabaldik! Everybody else said, huh? Like, what does that mean? Okay, I'm going to explain to you what it means.
Thank you.
Okay? With this board from Rabbi Cutler about a map. Okay? So imagine that I'm a trillionaire, okay? I'm a trillionaire. I got a lot of money to blow. And I have a Shigas. I like maps. So I want to make a real map. So I buy Pennsylvania. Okay? I buy Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania now belongs to me. Now I'm going to make a map of the United States of America. So I bring in bulldozers and all things, and I make the country, to scale, 1 to 20, whatever it is, with the lakes and with the mountains, to scale, everything to scale. And I push it and make a little America. Then I build cities. And I build a Chicago, and I build a Los Angeles, and I build a Seattle. And each one I put the right amount, I put buildings in it like that, but to scale. And then I take people and I shrink them and I put them inside there. And I populate this country with this map with 350 million people. Some people are doing farms, there's little farms, the little sizes, etc., right? And I blow my $1 trillion, okay? Or my $3 trillion that I got, okay? So I go to this little person who's walking over here inside the map and says, who are you? He says, well, I don't know, I'm Yankel. He says, he's Yankel, but he's also representing a bigger Yankel who lives in New York City. He's both. That's what it means the Torah is a map. There, and a map, there's a circle, there's a dot. It's a dot, but it also represents something greater. It's also a mushel to something greater. Both are true. So the Zohar talks about there's a mitzvah called Rachel, there's a mitzvah called Leah. And everything that Rachel did represents a pikabola and hagam Kadosh Baruch Hu has with the Bria. That means Rachel didn't live? Of course Rachel lived. But Rachel was big enough that she lived both being Rachel and being a representative as a mushel to something greater than herself. So we can learn from everything Rachel did about that meaning that Kadosh Baruch Hu has, how Hagar has with the world called Midas Rachel. And the same thing with Leah. So what the Talmud Rambam is saying, that Aaron HaKohen function on two levels. There's Aaron HaKohen, the mensch, and he did XY as opposed to YX. There's Aaron HaKohen represents the idea of Aaron HaKohen in the Torah. And that Aaron HaKohen in the Torah, there's multiple ways to understand what that means. And they're all true.
So this physical Aaron HaKohen did not do what the representation...
He did one way, but the level of representation...
He did.
And well, once he represents, there's different ways to interpret what the representation is.
But Moshe Rabbeinu was there. Moshe Rabbeinu should have told him, it's like that up there, do it like that here too.
That's what he told him, but there's another way to understand. Like, both ways are up there.
Oh, both ways are up there.
That's El Elyon Kim Chayim. That's what Kibra, that's what we understand, that there's multiple ways that the interpreter are both are emes. How that works, that's another conversation. So that's how I always use this piece for Rav Aaron. Mm-hmm. Rav Aaron says it's like a map. You know, the dot represents something bigger in Shema. You know, bigger. You know, so the Torah, as much as the Torah is a story and it's a real life story, but it's a real life story which is also a mushel to something. So I like using my mushel to be mazbe the mushel of Aaron Kelder.
Yeah.
So he says compares it to a map. So so I thought of like a few points. It's more than meets the eye, obviously, right? The map represents much more than it is. You need a key to understand it. Like, what does this dot mean?
Yeah.
Right? You need to learn how to read a map. You need to set the map up in the right direction.
Uh-huh.
It gives you an understanding of an area. And a map could represent the plan. We talk about a map in the sense of not just, you know, I map out a plan. Right? So a lot of these things are true about Torah. You know, I think once you compare it to a map, this could have needs to be oriented correctly is the point which comes to mind. I don't necessarily think about that point. But just like you got to hold the map in the right direction, Torah is a map. It's got to be held, it's got to be, you got to work with it in the right direction. Obviously, you need a key to understand it. That was like, you know, some of the things I played with. And so, just you want to look through the Torahs compared to a Kala, Torahs compared to Shemin. So, actually, the Medrash says the Torahs compared to five liquids. It's compared to the word Chadashim. So, Chadashim is Cholov, Dvash, Shemin, Yayin, Mayim. So we know there's seven mashka. The two other mashkas, you know, are tau, which really is included in mayim, and dam. Tau is not compared to dam anywhere. So I'm saying, but that's so yad shach adam. Interesting, right? You take the two out. Tau is compared to esh and to or, you know, which maybe the two different topics compared to drash. There's a medrash that says the tau is compared to a ball. So there's a Tosis in Sukkah. Tosis in Sukkah quotes a Medrash of Psikta, which says, "It says Kedarbanois." What's Lashon Pasuk there in Kehelus? So Chazal say Kedarbanois is like Kikardish Albanish Azorka Zulazu. It used to be the girls used to play ball, not boys. Just Torah is also Nizrik Mipal Pat. If throw, that's what I would throw. Wrong throw. O-W. You have to prepare to catch it. You have to practice. Make sure you catch it directly. You don't catch on the bump because it hits the bump on the ground. Sometimes it goes off a different direction than you want it to. And there's a back and forth, like a Rebbe to a Talmud, a Talmud to a Rebbe. I just found this message now.
That's very cool.
Like, you know, That was a cool one. And then on the next page, there's a medrash compared to Tarot, to Semer Pishtim, to Arugas Aboisim, to Salt, to Tamachayim, to a Te'ena, to an Isha Toiva, Eitz Chaim, he to a tree, I didn't write down, just a tree. Like so many different things which Tarot is compared to. And I guess the point, each one, there's something which it adds, something to think about.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.